Thank you, everyone, for coming. I wanted to do something a little bit different for the Haggadah Shir. Normally, previous years, I should say, what we've done is, you know, gone through in each part of the Haggadah and shared, you know, insights. Divrei Torah is to what's, you know, something to think about, maybe something you can share over, you can say, you know, with your family. But I wanted to do a different approach this time. Instead of short little ideas, I wanted to try to explain the steps of the Seder. What's that meant? What is the whole Seder experience supposed to accomplish? And how we can, if we understand what we're supposed to do with it, then we'll hopefully get to where we're supposed to be going. Speak to people who have an itinerary. You know, I'm traveling. I'll tell you exactly which states I'm going to. And I'll tell you what sites I'm going to see. Or if they're traveling to wherever, Europe, they're going to tell you these are the countries I'm going to go to, and this is how I'm going to be there, and this is what I'm going to see when I'm there. So before we begin the Seder, we have an announcement of the 15 steps that we're going to be going on our journey. Where else does the number 15 come up? So tonight's the night of visual aids. You look in the base of Migdash. In the base of Migdash, there were 15 steps leading from this area to going up till the next. And each one of these 15 steps, this is where in the Tehillim, where we say Shir HaMalos. Shir HaMalos, a song of a ma'alot in modern Hebrew, are stairs. So it's the song of going up. So the number 15 is representative of changing from one's current level, right? Where we're at, starting off, and getting to another place, getting to increase spirituality. So too, welcome. So to the 15, steps. It's 15 keys. They can open up the doors. They can help us get out of our limits and things that confine us. As we've spoken about in previous years, the words for leaving Egypt, Yitziat Mitzrayim. So Mitzrayim is the country, Egypt, but it's more than that. In Hebrew, the word for something that's confining or limiting is a Metzar. It's something that constricts me. So we talk about leaving Mitzrayim, it means I'm leaving the constraints. I'm leaving back the things that are holding me back. All of us have issues we're working on. Life is a work in progress. We're all trying to grow. We have to figure out what are the tools. How can we have a meaningful Pesach Seder, which is one of the holiest nights of the year? How can we tap into that and try to use it in our lives? So I'd like to go through each one of them. I have sheets, a few lines. You want to jot down ideas? You don't have to. There is no test at the end. But hopefully, we'll be able to discuss, and again, this is not a shir, this is a shmoo, so anything you'd like to add, please feel free. The first of the 15 stops is Kadesh, right? So we say the Kiddush. It's the first of the four cups of wine that we have at the Seder. And we talk about the word Kadesh. So in Hebrew, comes from three letters, Kuf, Dalad, Shin. That is a Hebrew root, and it comes up in other areas as well. So we know Kadesh, we know it's Kiddush. Literally, with the word Kadesh, I'll translate it loosely, is to make a separation. Whenever we're making a distinction between one thing and the next, we use the verb, or word, I should say, Kadesh. For example, Kiddush Friday night, okay, 6 days of the week are done with, now it's time for Kiddush. When a person donates property to the Beis HaMikdash, to the temple, so that property is now designated, it's unique, it's called Hekdesh. Same word, Kuf Dalet Shin, Hekdesh, it's property of the base of nature. It's off limits. A commoner is no longer to use it. It belongs, it's property to God, so to speak. Another example where that root word is used to separate something is marriage. Kiddushin is where, as Tosos explains, that the woman is isolating and separating herself from every other man, and the man is isolating himself from every other woman, and there's a special unit, and they're separating. So that's what the word Kadesh. I like to quote from one of my colleagues, Rabbi Dr. Alan J. Uter. So he had such a bakiyas, I think his doctorate was in Semitic languages. So like he could read, Ugaritic, like we read the New York Times. Not the one should read the New York Times, but theoretically the person would still do, you could read it like he was reading Ugaritic. So he pointed out what the word Kadesh means in ancient Semitic languages. This we're trying this holy, separate. The word Kadesh means that which does not decay. Which is how ancient civilizations, if you think about it, we're living in the age of refrigerators. We can preserve things for quite some time. But things decay. Holiness, God, that which does not decay. Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one who does not decay, the one who's eternal. That's really what they were saying. So the first step on our journey of the Pesach Seder, the first step is Kadosh. We have to separate ourselves. We have to separate ourselves from the things that are going. The next one is Urchatz. Now Urchatz was washing of the hands. That's significant because Because it's the only one that's connected to the previous step. Every single one of the 15, or actually the remaining of the 13, are not connected per se, but here's a vav. The vav is always a vav achi, where it attaches itself. So there's something connected between kadesh, sanctify yourself, say the kiddush, urchatz, and washing of the hands. Some of the commentaries explain that the connection is based on what it says in Tehillim, in the book of Psalms, sur me'rav ase tov, turn away from evil and do good. In life, you have, you know, it's a flip side, it's the same coin, but there's two sides to it. Sometimes we try to stop doing negative behaviors in our life. Sometimes we try to increase the positive. Normally, throughout the rest of the year, the order is always, as it says in the verse, sur me'ra, turn away from ra, from evil, from bad, stop all that, and then va'aseh tov. Person's trying to get out of an unhealthy relationship. So, sur me'ra, get away. Make a distance, separate yourself, and then aseh tov, then start to do good things. A person has an addiction or a habit, something that's you know, negative behavior, something they're working on. So get out of it. Sur me'ra, get away, then aseh tov. However, Pesach is different. Aseh tov comes first on the night of Pesach. Because the word, do you know what the word Pesach literally means? Think about it. What does the word mean over and over again? The English is a pretty good translation. Pass over, to jump, to skip, dilug, to travel leaps and bounds. Pesach means to jump. So, why is that significant? Because the name always is telling us a deeper lesson of the holiday. Normally, throughout the year, any other night of the year, we never tell a person to take big jumps, take big steps. Because big jumps lead to big falls right afterwards. It's working with, you know, high school and college kids for many, many years. People who tried to take on too much, too fast, fell. So we never advise that. We never tell you, I won't tell stories, but trust me, you know, big leaps lead to big falls. Except Pesach. The night of Pesach is the one exception to the whole year. We tell you jump, go big, because the shackles are off. And if we understand the whole system that's being set up by these 15 steps, that there's a tremendous amount that a person can accomplish on the night of Pesach. So normally the order is first get away the bad things, Surah Me'ra, and then Aseh Tov. Here we flip it, and it's Kadesh. First comes Kedusha, first comes the holiness, the positive, and then as a result of doing so much good, then the bad will, so to speak, will fall off. The next stage of karpas. So karpas is where we eat the vegetable, dipped in salt water. So what kind of vegetables do you use in your house? What do you use for karpas? What?
Parsley.
What else? There's no wrong answers. I mean, there is a wrong answer, but, you know.
Potato.
You tell me you're using, like, you know, a potato, right?
Celery.
So what's that?
Celery.
Celery, right? Rav Tights used to use
banana.
A banana. Why? Banana. Why a banana?
No one knows it's
a dama. It, well, okay, the bracha is a dominant, but to do something to get the kids' curiosity aroused, to pique their curiosity. So, potato, okay, I know, a dama, celery, that's a little boring. What's dad doing with a banana? Okay, so he would do something, little things like that. But I want to explain a little bit deeper what it means of according to something to be used for karpas, the bracha has to be borei pri ha'adama, something that comes from the ground. And when we talk about adama, ground, it means earthliness, it means physical actions. We ourselves were called adam, human beings, because we come from the adama. That's where we come from. So our name reflects our essence. But this is what this form explained. When we take something from the ground, materialism, we dip it in the salt water. What do you think the salt water represents?
Tears.
Exactly. And the idea is to take the physical and to immerse it and show this is not the end unto itself. That there's a purpose, that the tears are a cleansing agent. Now that we've ready to move ahead and to get some real work going on, so that earthly vegetable, which is like the body, so we immerse it in the thing, you know, we cleanse our body with our soul's tears. And that's an idea that's being brought out by the third step of this. You know, freedom is a very common word, but I don't think we really understand what it means to truly be free. Freedom doesn't mean running away from the world. Freedom does not mean having zero responsibilities, but to understand what it means that we're celebrating the time of our freedom, we have to truly understand what that means. So we're taking the body and we're, so to speak, dipping it in, showing that, again, the vegetable is the materialism, is the material world, and we're trying to cleanse it to build something up. So how do we release all this? How do we release from the materialism that holds us back? And, you know, sometimes we act in a petty way, and with jealousy, with, you know, small-mindedness, and we get caught up with our ego. So that's the fourth level. The next step is the yachatz. The yachatz is breaking of the... Sorry, I'm number four, right? Breaking of the middle matzah. So let me give you an example of... There's a medrash that says there was once some sweet grapes, and these two people wanted to come to eat the sweet grapes, but there was a problem. One person was blind and couldn't see what the grapes are, and another person was crippled. He was lame. He couldn't walk. So the two got together and said, well, let's make a partnership. I got legs, but I can't see. The guy says, great. I can see, but I can't walk. So he puts the blind man... goes on the shoulders. No, I said backwards. The crippled one goes on the shoulders of the blind man, right? And they make a partnership. Welcome. There's somewhere. So they make a partnership, the blind guy and the lame person. And the one who has healthy legs, he's walking around. The one who has the healthy eyesight shows him where to go, and they come together and they're able to eat the grapes. So that's where the medrash ends. The idea of it is that one is the body and one is the soul. Which is which? The legs is the body, right? It can move around, but it has no vision, it has no sight, it has no goal where it's going to. The neshama, the soul, can see, but it can't move, it can't do anything without a body. So the two come together. We have the material world, we have the physical world, and we need both. And the idea at the end is to somehow unite them, but the first step is the breaking, is the yachatz. That's interesting in Hebrew. For matzah and chametz, two out of the three letters are the exact same. Did you ever realize that? They both have a mem, and they both have a tzadi. The difference between chametz and matzah is one letter is a hey, and one letter is a ches. If you draw a picture in your mind, that's why I give you a pen so you can draw. You can draw a hey has a little hole at the top, and the ches is completely sealed. But it's just that smallest little amount that separates the chametz from the matzah, which is reflected in halacha as well. That if you have, everyone wants to get the 18-minute matzahs. If you have a 19-minute matzah, it's probably no good. You're too long. Well, a few seconds too much, and the whole thing becomes ruined. If a little drop of chametz falls into my chicken soup, you have to throw out the whole thing. There's no concept of 60 times of majority against it. We don't say it. We say even the smallest amount is no good. It ruins it. It's a special, unique rule for Pesach. But the idea is there can't be any ego. At this stage, there can't be. And the idea of taking the matzah, which represents humility, that which doesn't rise. Again, chametz rises. It's ego. It's me. It's a sense of self. It's an inflated sense of self. So the matzah is humility, and we even break that. We take that middle part, we break that as well. And then we come to the Maggid section of the actual reciting of the Haggadah. Part of freedom means the ability to ask questions. Right? Whenever you have somebody or an institution or a doctrine that says you cannot question, you cannot ask any questions, then you're in danger. No, there's like a, I saw a bumper sticker once, you know, question authority, but raise your hand first. We value the question itself, and it's a sign of freedom. Slaves can't ask a question. Only a free person can ask questions. This beautiful story related a few years ago from Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz Shlita. He was once speaking to a group of elementary school kids, and there was a whole production, they were able to get him to come. They told him we're only going to have, you know, very few minutes for the whole thing. He says, I don't have time. My schedule, they worked it out. Basically, every kid was seated in the auditorium. They had time for him to basically walk in, say his message, and then walk out. And that was it. It was like the whole thing happened in a few minutes. And what he spoke to these kids about was, he says, I want you to make your teachers' lives as miserable as possible. I want you to ask them the most difficult questions that you possibly can. Force them to do their homework. Force them to understand the subject material well. I want you to make their lives miserable. And he got it and he walked out. That was his whole speech. So the principal gets up on the microphone and says, students, I just want to thank Rabbi Steinsaltz for coming, but please, he did not mean it literally. He really did not mean that he wants you to make your teachers' lives as miserable as possible. Rabbi Steindl, who had been walking out of the room, turns around, walks back up to the podium, and says in front of the whole audience, "I meant it literally. I want you to make your teachers' lives as miserable as possible. I want you to ask the most difficult questions you can." Because that's what Judaism is all about asking the most difficult questions you possibly can. And that's how we start off by the Maggid section of the Manishtana, of asking the questions. And the halacha is, technically speaking, even if a person is all by themselves, for whatever reason, if they're all by themselves, they ask the questions to themselves, because there's a point of the question itself has an inherent value to it. Questioning also shows a different aspect as well, that I'm not complacent with where I am. I'm not content. I realize that I need to continue and grow. I remember a lot of stories tonight. I remember when we were on vacation, we went down to Boca Raton, Florida, and they have a special prayer service, you know, where you can literally dive in the morning and watch the sunrise over the ocean, and it's unbelievable, you know, to be diving. It's cold, but it's worth it. Yeah, yeah. The sun rises. So I didn't really know. I'm not so familiar with Boca Raton. But I remember diving there, and so we wanted to take the kids out. So we went there like in the afternoon to this nice little place, and there's an overhang. And we didn't plan, it's a public space, anybody can go there. But it happened to be that while we were there, there was like an AA meeting happening, Alcoholics Anonymous, or it was some form of things. And the people were sitting there in a circle, in their like lawn chairs. And it wasn't a private conversation, because we were just sitting there, and they were just talking. And the conversation these people were having, they were so open. They were so honest. They were so brutal. They were discussing the struggles that they're having and the pain that they're having. And I was just sitting there, and I was so impressed by the level of support that they had for each other, that the genuine care and concern that each one of the people in this group had for each other. And they were encouraging each other. And I guess, I don't know, but I guess that you get like a special medal if you've gone a few days with sobriety. It's like a 10-day button, a 30-day button, a 100-day button. And they were announcing who's gone, you know, 30 days. And they were clapping and they were hugging. And they all came together. And you could feel the warmth that they had for each other. And that idea of a 12-step process, one of the fundamental doctrines in it is to realize there's a higher power. And I think it's so beautiful to realize that. Again, I'm not saying we're addicts, we have to go into a program. But I think the concept is very real. That to realize that we're not complete. And that's represented by this idea of the Seder, of the breaking of the matzah and trying to come back to it. So after we've gone through the whole, we've asked the questions, then we come to the sixth part, which is the rachtza, the washing of the hands. So, you know, after we've gone through this, we've reached a very new sublime level. We've gone through and we've told the story and we've expressed our freedom. And now we're ready to wash the hands again. But this washing of the hands is not like the first one. The first time we were washing our hands was getting rid of the negativity. Now we're washing on a higher level, a higher conscious. And that's what it says, that we're transforming. At this point, we're ready to take the material and to transform it, to use it as a means to an end, to more spiritual. Sometimes you have to run away from the piece of chocolate cake. Sometimes you sit and enjoy the chocolate cake because it's going to bring you to a place of simcha, of joy, and you're going to be able to accomplish much more after that. You're not running away from the material world, but you're using the material world as a tool to come even closer to Hashem. So it's time to start eating, right? Motzi. You know. In contrast to karpas, this is not a negative eating. This is very positive. A very positive eating. So what's the word for bread in Hebrew? Lechem. Lamed, ches, mem, lechem. If you change the vowels from the word lechem, it could also spell the word lochem, which means to wage war. A milchama is a battle. So there's nothing coincidental. If the word for bread is the same word as a battle, we battle with physical. It's a real struggle. There's a story told in, I think, Chovas HaLevavos, where a soldier's coming home from the battlefield, and a wise man's greeting him, and he tells him, "Look, you've just come home from the small war, now you get ready for the big war." Small war was the real one, with the guns and the ammunition. But the main war person has to fight is with their own negativity. Yetzer Hara, the force inside of us, is trying to convince us and to push us and to corrupt us and doing things that are not true to our divine self. And yet, we come to Motzi, we say Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. When we're able to control that, we're able to control the Lechem, the materialism. You change the word, the letters around a little bit, it becomes Cholem, a dream. When you have big dreams and big aspirations, this is what we're here for. We remind ourselves of why we're here. So at this point in the Pesach Seder, we're transforming into looking towards what we can become. We've commemorated the past. We've realized that we started off as slaves, Avadim Hayinu, and now we've gotten the taste of freedom. And now we continue. This is like this is where the first real eating takes place right now, right? So we have the matzah. We spoke about in our Kashrus class maybe a few years ago, right? That the Kashrus 101 is that you are what you eat. You assume what you consume, right? That you are what you eat. So we talked about the Ramban, pointed out that if a person eats animals with negative character traits, with cruelty, then that part becomes a part of who we are. So we have to understand for a minute what exactly is matzah. So if I asked you guys for a minute, what would you say is representative? What do you become by eating matzah? What type of food is it? What character traits, what personality does the matzah have?
Dry and brittle.
Dry and brittle? You know, like the Taimanis had the big fat pita. Okay. Good answer. Dry and brittle. You like the shmur matzah or like the machine matzah?
Either
one.
Either.
You don't have a preference either or?
No.
I like the shmur.
Me too.
Yeah? Good. What do you think? What do you think the matzah is? That's not, you can't just shrug your shoulders. You know? Joey.
Yes.
What is matzah?
What is matzah?
Yeah, what's it represent?
Maybe it's something that's hurried.
Hurry, that's true. It has to be hurried, something that's quick. So if we eat it, we're going to be running around all day, running in a hurry.
It's
flat, simple, simple, excellent.
Honest.
It's flat, it's honest.
No,
there's no, oh, modest. Oh, yeah, true, 100%. There's a Zohar which describes it, it was called Michael Menuso, which means a bread of faith, of emunah, faith in God. And it says in the holy books that the moment the person's eating matzah, upstairs, like a gate opens up in heaven. And all of the faith and all of the emunah that a person's going to have in the upcoming year is channeled into a person at the moment that they're eating matzah. It's the bread of faith. You're tasting, you're eating emunah, and you are what you eat. So if you're eating emunah, you'll have an increase in emunah in understanding. It's not just some heebie-jeebie hocus-pocus thing. It makes a lot of sense. If the whole idea behind the Pesach of achieving true freedom is understanding that everything is from Hashem, and here's the food that represents that, then by bringing that into my life, I understand I have more of a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my world. I understand, I appreciate His life. So that's what it says, it's a bread of faith. There's a Zohar which says that's called a Michle Da'asvusa, which means, on the second night, it's called a bread of healing. And perhaps the two are very much connected, that healing and faith come together. I'm not talking about faith healing, I'm talking about just, but when we come to a place of recognizing Hashem, there's a beautiful bumper sticker called Emunah, it's all from Hashem. And we get into trouble in life when we forget that it's all from God. We start thinking that, it's up to me, and it's this boss, and it's that boss, and it's only this, and it's this stock investment, it's that stock investment. We forget that really, yes, those are like natural channels, but really, it's all from Hashem. And we're bringing that realization into our life by eating the matzah. The next comes the maror, number 9. So we're still enslaved because there's bitterness, right? The maror has to be bitter. What do you use for maror in your house?
Horseradish.
What? Lettuce. Right? So someone said, do you want the lettuce or you want the real maror? So I pointed out that lettuce is the real maror. If you look in there, that's exactly what it says. The number one, the top choice is to use lettuce for maror. Okay, so I picked the lettuce. But I like the little, like the white stuff. What's it called?
Gishmak.
Yeah, it makes your nose. Yeah, it's good. It's gishmak. I love it. Okay. Why do we have it? Why do we have the maror? Because life has bitterness to us. But we're really, we're supposed to eat it together. That's the segue into the korech, when you eat the matzah and the maror together. So if we had to isolate the two foods, really there's three foods we're supposed to be eating, but we don't have the Korban Pesach, which was the lamb, right, that was sacrificed and ate at the Seder. So we're supposed to have a sandwich with it's a good barbecue. You have your meat, you got your sandwich, you got your matzah, And then you got a little spicy mustard on the side, you know, the geshmak, the chrein, the horseradish that makes a little spice. So the Or HaChaim really says that. We think that mor is supposed to be something purely bitter. He says, no, the bitterness of the mor is there only to enhance the eating of the meat. Which really means that the bitterness in life is only there to really enhance our lives. And it's hard because we don't look for bitterness, we don't appreciate it when it comes to us. But if we have emunah and faith in God, and that whole point of having the bitterness and those bitter experiences, that we eat it all together, we all consume because we realize it's all part of one larger picture. If we just had one by itself, so we wouldn't combine them two, but that's the next step in the process of combining, having this maror together. And then we come to the Shulchan Aruch, literally the set table. So that's when we're eating our festive meal, but now we're eating on a whole new level. You know, we started off the Seder by saying, anybody who's hungry, let them come and eat. Anybody who's hungry, come and eat. So isn't that silly? Because we're already, you know, if I really wanted to invite you to my Seder, I'd make a few phone calls like weeks in advance. I wouldn't just, you know, sit down to my meal in my dining room. I don't go like the door and like, you know, hello, I'm sitting around. If anybody's hungry, come and eat. A joke? Who are you inviting at this point? Everyone has a place to go. So maybe perhaps it's for that reason that on the Jewish calendar, the first night of Pesach always falls on the exact same day as Tisha B'Av, the day that we mourn for the Jewish, for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Because if we were serious about it, if we really had a genuine care for others, we would take the time out and to invite them. So it's a little bit of a, you know, wiping the egg off of our faces and realizing that we say a lot of things, but do we really mean it? Are we sincere? And that's all part of freedom as well. It's about not having a contradiction between who we are on the inside versus who we are on the outside. That when I say certain things, I mean them. I'm sincere. I'm not two-faced. I'm not, you know, I talk to people behind their back, but I really think this, then I'll smile when I see them. Then I'm genuine, I'm sincere in this. Okay. Moving along is Safon, the Afikomen. So Safon literally is a direction. It's one of the four directions in Hebrew. Safon of an egg, right? Ufa, ratzta, you know the nigga? Yeah. So Safon is what direction? North. It's the north. North is always seen symbolically as a place that's cold, that's dry, that's devoid of any spirituality. Any place, what's that? No? So we go, even those places, even those moments in our life that seem to be so in the north, they're so desolate, they're so far gone, even those darkest moments, even there we bring out the spirituality. To realize that there's nothing, you know, outside of Hashem's universe. It's not we're one way in the synagogue, we're another way at home, or we're a third way when we're at work. It's all one cohesive unit. And even if to our limited eyes, we see places that seem to be lacking, it's up to us to bring out the light that's there. It's just much more hidden. It's much, much more concealed. And sometimes it doesn't always make sense to us. There's a story told of a king who had his son deliver a letter to a few days away. But he told his son, the prince, before you go on this journey, I have one condition. It's the only thing I'm telling you to do with the letter. Do not make a bet with anybody you meet. Do you understand me? Yeah. Okay. No bets. I got it. So he goes off on the journey to deliver this letter that his father has. And they're staying over in a hotel. And they're eating and they're drinking. And a group of guys come over and says, hey, we know you. You're the prince. Goes, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah. You have warts all over your back. No, I don't. Yeah, no, we've heard. That's why you wear like these funny clothing, these shirts. You got warts all over your back. He says, no, I don't. You take a hike. He goes, no, you got it. They come back. They're you know, they're going after him. And he finally says, I'm so sure you have warts all over your back. Pulls out a briefcase. $1 million cash. He says, you've got warts on your back. He says, I don't have it. He says, $1 million says you do. He says, no way. So he remembers his father's advice. He thinks, look, my father's going to think I'm a pretty smart guy. I got him $1 million. He's going to be happy. It's okay, they go in the back, takes off his shirt. Oh, you don't have warts. Okay, silly me, here's $1 million. Prince this thing. I'm so smart. Goes, delivers the letter, and comes back home. Father looks at him, he says, you delivered the letter? He says, yes. Did you make any bets along the way? Well, Dad, funny you should ask me, because, you know, these guys came to me, and they started off with me, and I said, did you make any bets along the way? Says, first of all, let me tell you something. I got you $1 million. He says, what? goes, yeah, they told me I had things. He says, what did you do? He says, I took off my shirt. I showed them. Here's $1 million. And the father is furious. The king is livid. And he's looking at him. He wants to break every bone in this kid's body. He says, what did I do? What did I do wrong? The king looks at him and says, you fool. I had a $50 million bet they couldn't get you to take off your shirt. Sometimes we think we've got it all figured out. And from our limited human perspective, it might make a lot of sense. $1 million might look really good. We don't know what the master plan is. We don't understand why Hashem is running the universe the way he's running the universe. But that's what it means to have emunah. And to have that level of reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Echad, it's only Hashem. Hashem's not one. I know many of us, my family, we all sing the song that who knows one, I know one, who knows two, I know two. Some don't sing the song because they feel that it's placing Hashem incorrectly. It's like in a numerical sequence. God is one, and this is two, and this is three, and this is four, and 11 of the stars in Joseph's dream. But you just put God into a numerical sequence. What it really means when you say Hashem Echad, God is one, means God is singularly unique, that there is nothing else in this world except for godliness. There's a fancy, you'll help me out, there's a fancy, they show you like the ink blots. What's it called, the Rosh?
Rosh.
Right, they show you the blot, right? They show you and they go, what is that? Oh, that was my third grade math teacher, right? And they show you another one, what's this? And this is what I had for lunch 2 days ago, right? Like, whatever your answers are to the ink dots, they show you. So Rav Mishra says, you know how you come to a Pesach Seder, you've gone through this whole spiritual process. They say the number one is God. See, what, two? The first got two of the tablets. Three of the Avos, so the forefather. You go through it. Every number you say, all I can think about is God. They say this number, 13, is God's attributes of mercy. Every number I say, because I'm so in tune with what the reality is. So in that, okay, that's a defense of the those who have the custom of singing the song at the end of the meal. But let's just finish up. The 13th step is the reciting of blessing. Now, we have to understand what it means. We talk about Borech. In Hebrew, talking about little Hebrew words, Levarech means to bring something down. So, for example, the Mishnah discusses a case where a person has a vine that's growing from a tree, and they take that branch, they put it down in the ground, replant it, and pull it up from another spot. That's the verb, is Beis Reish Chaf, Chaf, is that right? To bring down. So we say blessings. That means we're bringing blessings into our lives. We're taking all these, you know, fancy schmancy philosophical ideas and we're bringing it down into a very real, tangible way. And then we come to Hallel, to thank Hashem for thing. So the word Hallel, there's a pasuk Behilo Nero. In English, it's a nice one of those English words that comes from Hebrew. Behilo Nero, what's it called when you have a light shining above your head? A halo. So it comes from Hebrew, right? It's a thing. So Hallel is the praise, the light is shining. And finally come to the Mirza. The end of it where we say, Hashem, please accept this. Let this be favorable to you. Let everything that we've worked upon come and bring it with us. It's not just another experience. One of the halachos that's mentioned in the Seder is Eimath Tirnaf for Pesach Afikom, that you don't eat anything after the Afikomen, so the taste should be in your mouth. So there's a discussion, right? If you're allowed to eat foods or drinks, at least after the meal is over. But the whole point, it doesn't mean, I mean, it certainly does mean on a very literal level that the taste of the afikom and the last pizza mash should be in your mouth. But Rabbi Simon once explained that it means that the taste, the experience of it should stay with you. That Pesach should be something that doesn't just end after the holiday is over and we go back to eating our hot dogs and hamburgers and pizza and whatever it is. But the whole point of it was that we went through a spiritual odyssey. We did something. We connected with something. And therefore, it's not just to remain so that, but the taste should remain with us. Now, in Lubavitch, I think they don't say this last part. The minhag is not because they don't say it never ends. But I think the majority of us do say this last section of the Nirtza. We ask Hashem to accept upon us everything that may be favorable to Hashem, everything that we worked upon and thought about and tried to incorporate in the Pesach. If you look, I realize now when I Xeroxed it, it didn't come across a lot, but I'll just read it to you from the original. It says, the 15 steps of the Seder each reflect a personality type which imparts one piece of the Passover transcended story. Together, all 15 parts weave a beautiful tapestry, leading us to personal freedom and universal emancipation. Before the Seder begins, Each attendee should choose one of the personality types listed below, corresponding to the 15 Seder steps. When your respective stage in the Seder comes around, communicate to the group the personality type you've chosen to portray. Be creative and find ways to express your personality, role play, tell a story, or act out the part. Engage the group and invite them to comment, and together personalize the 15 steps that bring the Seder alive. So we'll go through the 15 one more time. Kadesh, the sanctifier, distinguishes between the holy and the mundane. Urchatz is the cleaner, cleans the mind, body, and heart of clutter and distractions in life. Karpas is the dipper, dips and sublimates the material vegetable and the saltwater tears that come from remembering a more spiritual state. Yachatz, the breaker, breaks his subjective self to see a broader perspective. Magid, the storyteller, relates the story of life in dialogue form. Rachza, the washer, submerges the mind, body, and heart as a prelude to the next steps. Motzi, the earthly one, blesses and recognizes that even things earthly bread are heavenly. Matzah is the selfless one, doesn't allow the ego, the dough, to rise and always remains selfless. Maror, the empathizer, feels another's bitterness and pain. Korach, the binder, sandwiches selflessness and empathy into one experience called life. Shulchan Aruch, the implementer, sets the table and ensures that we have all the tools to eat the meal of life. Safon, the knower of secrets, reveals that which is hidden, the unconscious. Be'erach, the gracious one, blesses and acknowledges life's gifts. And Hallel, the praiser, sings praise and places complete trust in God's hands. And finally, Nirtza, the acceptor. Not action, but complete surrender to being accepted and received by God. So it's a very auspicious evening. And hopefully through talking about some of the highlights, some of the spiritual work that goes into preparing for that, we'll be able to have a much more meaningful Pesach Seder this year. Are there any questions? No?
I like the personality.
The personality? This is from Rabbi Simon Jacobson. He has a called the Meaningful Life Center. This is one of his... Okay, thank you very much, everyone. Chag Sameach.